it's almost like this person.
You're listening to UFO Undercover with your host, Joe Montaldo, right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
I had had enough.
Well, you drove out there into the middle of nowhere and had some sort of loud verbal display challenging ET in general out in the middle of nowhere.
Oh, yeah, that's what I was doing. I actually had a pistol in my hand at the time. I was really ticked off. When I was having this fit, I was waving the gun in the air, okay, and I had this fit. And at this moment, I said, okay.
Was a Louisiana man named Montaldo. Folks around called him Six Gun Joe. Worked with ICAR, don't you know? Investigating UFOs. Out for a drive with a gal one night, they stopped to check out a reporting site. When an alien lit right there on the ground, commenced to throw in his weight around. Now, old Six Gun didn't take too kindly to that kind of thing. Especially without Vaseline or anything like that, you know. Seriously. Well, Six Gun looked that critter right in the eye and said, any last wish before you die, y'all? Reached for his gun, quick as a twitch, and said, fill your claw, you son of a bitch. Now, a legend spread across the land about this pistol-waving man. But if you're from space or from Earth below, you don't give no lip to Six Gun Joe.
Listening to the show and wish to join us in the chat room, visit paltalk.com. Go to the social issues, select other, and enter the UFO Paranormal Radio Network.
Hello, this is Angela Thomas with a message about living life to the fullest. As a psychic clairvoyant, I often give insights to one's career path, financial situation, or relationship. Whether one is happy or not in their current situation, where he or she is right now is an important part of learning valuable lessons that can lead to fulfilling one's life purpose. If I can offer you insights, feel free to contact me at 636-278-2272, again 636-278-2272, or visit my website, angelathomas.org. I'm considered a psychic, so I provide accurate and detailed psychic readings for individuals as well as groups. Remember, no matter what influences your life at the moment, live life to the fullest. Stay in gratitude, count your blessings, and prepare yourself for more opportunities around the corner. I'm Psychic Angela Thomas, and my website is angelathomas.org.
Whoa! Did you hear?
Listen to the Church of Mavis radio show, hosted by Jeffrey Pritchett.
7
p.m. Eastern.
Friday.
Nice. Follow your weird and journey into the high strange. Be sure to stop by
www.churchofmavisradio.com
for upcoming shows, paranormal news, and show archives. That's
www.churchofmavisradio.com.
The paranormal.
Ghosts.
Spirits.
Demons.
Reincarnation.
Past lives.
The afterlife.
Divination.
Exorcisms.
Witchcraft.
the unseen.
He's psychic medium Chris George.
And he's Victor the Voice Furman.
We are Second Sight Radio. Join us live
every Thursday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time
on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network.
Tune in to the Mind Cemetery with your hosts, Chip and Nicole, at 9 p.m. Eastern.
Exclusively on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network. We delve into UFOs, abductions, ghosts, aliens, conspiracies, and cryptozoology.
And how could you ever forget about those creepy topics you won't hear on your local news?
This is where I would insert my obligatory skeptical statement. The Mind Cemetery, where the paranoia about the paranormal comes to rest.
Follow us on Twitter and subscribe to us on Facebook. Also, check us out on our website, mindcemetery.com, for show updates and the critically acclaimed Mind Cemetery blog.
It's not critically acclaimed, but you should check it out anyway, mindcemetery.com.
Truth is reality. The connection is you. Check out Catherine Buckaloo on Truth Connections Radio, Thursday night at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on 107.7 FM, the Paranormal Radio Network.
I'm Stephanie Benetti, and along with Joe Montaldo, we host News on the Flip Side. Come join us every Saturday night at 7 p.m. Central for our three-hour program. We have opinions on everything, and we're not afraid to share them. False history gets made all day, every day. The truth of the new is never on the news, but you can find it here with News on the Flip Side. Remember, don't be politically correct. Just be correct. Join us.
Tune in to UFO Undercover, Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, with your host, Joe Montaldo, right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Show yourself.
Welcome to UFO Undercover with your host, Joe Montaldo.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the episode from the cover. We're the new Joe Montaldo Show. No, we don't really use the cover anymore, but it's taking a little while to phase it out. It's phasing out slowly but surely, but it's going the way of the dodo bird. I mean, there'll always be UFO Undercover archives around, and there will be other hosts for UFO Undercover. Matter of fact, I was telling this to most of my ufologist friends, and a few more I'm going to let them know, and any of our contactee friends or anybody along those lines. The show is available to use. We're going to let... Well, some of our ufologist friends will use it to, you know, to talk about whatever they're going to talk about, and some of our other friends may use it, well, basically for the same thing. It's a good show. It's been around a long time. It has a very loyal audience, 3+ million listeners every week, anywhere from 3 to 3.8, so it's a great show. It's well-established. It's just I decided to do Joe Montaldo Show because, frankly, I wanted to do a little bit more science this year, and I do science on UFO on the cover, but not as much as I wanted to do. I also, a little paranormal stuff I wanted to get in, and for some of my New Age friends, because I got a few New Age friends out there, even though I hate on them all the time, I do have a few New Age friends out there, and because they know I really love them. I got to give them hell, though. But, you know, they've expressed interest in doing some stuff, and I said, well, you got to be careful here, as long as we're not, you know, going too much love, light, and laughter, we'll be okay. But anyway, they're going to be using it as well. Tonight's guest is going to be Neera Isley. She's been a regular on the show. Y'all should be quite familiar with her. We'll talk a little bit more, because I got a little clip I'm going to play for y'all before I introduce her. You can go, by the way, I like your blog. You can go over to the UFO on the cover site, and Neera is right there. I got two good-looking pictures of her up there. One that Dennis Reno did. Dennis does great work for all of us UFO people, and now he's doing a little political stuff. Got to talk to him about his politics. Other than that, he's pretty good. And I got another. She's a good-looking woman hanging out, so y'all go over there and click on it. I'll take you over to the sites now. Y'all can take a look around. But I'm going to play this little clip for everyone. I was, you know, I'm regularly looking for news. For news on the flip side, because y'all know I host a current news show on Saturdays, a four-hour current news show. And I was looking for news, you know, just going along. When I seen this article, it says real aliens wouldn't be green or bald. And then I realized, you know, what this article is about. So I'm going to play the video of this article for y'all. So, Neera, I'm going to bring you back in a second. You stay right where you are, ladies and gentlemen. Y'all hold on 1 second.
In February, NASA made a major announcement about the discovery of more than 700 new planets, which begged the question, are we alone? So we wondered, what if aliens existed?
Well, it'd be job security for me, that's one thing.
With that as the case, we're not alone, and that's actually quite comforting.
That actual first contact might be devastating for simple biological reasons.
Somewhere in our imaginations, between Bigfoot and the Loch Ness Monster, walk little green men from outer space who come in peace. But if aliens do exist, scientists who've been searching the skies for signs of life think they'll prove Hollywood is all wrong.
I don't think they're going to look the way they do in television and movies. Mostly little gray guys with big eyeballs, no hair, and no sense of humor.
Which shatters some pop culture images of aliens, including in H.G. Wells' famous novel, War of the Worlds. That image, so capturing, America thought it was under alien attack in 1938 when Orson Welles narrated the story on the radio. But scientists with the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence Institute, a nonprofit that's worked with NASA, think if aliens exist, our first encounter probably won't be with them, but rather a mechanical ambassador, like in the 1951 classic, The Day the Earth Stood Still.
In this century, we're probably going to develop artificial intelligence. We're probably going to develop machines. Well, you can be sure the aliens have done that. The ones we're likely to hear from are probably going to be machines.
So what if they did exist? And, like E.T., we could phone home to their population.
E.T., phone home.
It can go in a couple of different directions. One of them is that we would immediately accelerate our efforts to try to reach out to these beings and to communicate with them and to form some sort of relationship.
I can't decide whether I would first ask them do you have religion? Or whether I would first ask them, do you have music?
They can lay to rest these sorts of rumors about Roswell and various other sort of alien encounters that people talk about,
including fact-checking those recently declassified X-Files from the FBI, detailing some Air Force investigations about flying saucer sightings in New Mexico during the 50s and 60s. Then again, like in the movie Mars Attacks, if aliens do exist, it might be best to leave a few galaxies between us.
Maybe it's best to just leave them alone and not to engage with them. That would be better for them. Maybe that would be better for us.
It's quite possible that a virus or a bacterium that is symbiotic with them will be a devastating disease to us. Even wipe out human life.
Regardless of our intergalactic exchange, if aliens did exist, it might be a little humbling for us to know that we're not the center of the universe.
We will know that we're not the only kids on the block. And I think that philosophically, that's important. I think it's important in the same way that when Copernicus said that the Earth goes around the sun, not the other way around, it didn't have a whole lot of practical effect for most people, not right away, but it was philosophically very important.
It's not going to affect people's day-to-day life. Oh, you know, somebody's going to start a religion about it. It's going to be proof that all old religions were false, or it's going to be proof of this or proof of that. In practical terms, it's not going to change the way you do your grocery shopping.
What? So help me answer this question. What if...
Oh, that was entertaining. We're going to talk a little bit about this. First, I want to introduce Nira Isley. Nira, how you been, by the way? Sweetie, I haven't talked to you in like a year.
Oh, I know. I just crawled out from under my rock last November because I finished my book, and now I'm available for human interaction again. So.
Yeah, look, that's about the only way I'll ever get one written, if I can go bury myself somewhere. You know, with this new camp, my wife said maybe I'll finally have a chance. You know what's funny about this, Nira? I actually have two complete books outlined. Chapters, the whole 9 yards. I just can't ever seem to sit down and concentrate enough to fill in the gaps. And all the materials on the internet, we did like 40 shows just for material for these books, and I still, I'm just not a writer. I hate to say it, I'm just not. Mm-hmm. If anybody ever reads my text, you know what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm still recovering from this one. It took me about almost 5 years to write, and you know, I'm writing about some pretty significant trauma, and in order to write it effectively, I had to dredge it all up and kind of relive it. So it was a rough time. But I did get through it, and the book is out there now, and I didn't put UFO or ET in the title because I'm hoping to bring in new people to the UFO field with this book. So I've written it to hopefully have a broad appeal across several different demographics of folks in the U.S. and around the world, because people are reading it around the world now. So, and it has great reviews at Amazon.
Well, yeah, I know what you're talking about, but I still don't know how you sit down and just do it.
Yeah. Oh, I know, yeah. Well, you just about have to tie yourself down, you know, and it's tricky, you know, it's a tricky thing to do, but I did get it done, and if I ever write another book, it probably won't be nearly as difficult as this one. So.
That's what everybody keeps telling me. Maybe one day I'll figure out how to do it, but somebody just said, the book, what book? The book. I'll hear it. We'll let her promo it.
The book.
Yes, it's called The Book. Go out and get The Book by Nier.
Okay.
I apologize.
Okay.
Go ahead, give them a little feeder on it, and we'll talk a little bit more about it later on. But go ahead and tell them a little bit about it.
Well, the title is called Facing the Shadow, Embracing the Light, A Journey of Spirit Retrieval and Awakening. And if you want to indulge me, I'll read the poem that I put at the very beginning.
Cool.
It's called Medicine Story. It's a poem I wrote for the book. And here we go. Light the story fires. Light the sacred sage and cedar. Smell the sweet grass. Be at peace. Join this circle with full hearts. Come with open hearts. Sit with clear hearts. listen with strong hearts. See me. I'm tying my ankle to a stake in the earth that I may make my stand with courage. I'm taking back my power from those who stole it long ago. Hear me. This is my medicine story for the healing of my spirit. This is stone medicine of memory and water medicine of hidden depths. Hear me. This is my prayer to Sky Father, to Earth Mother. This is what happened long ago. This is what has been forgotten and must now be remembered. This is what has been hidden and must now be revealed. Hear me. This is for all people everywhere. So that was how I started it out.
Well, that's an excellent way to start it out. That's a good way, guys. That leads into a lot of areas there. Actually, it was kind of relaxing, though, Dan. Well, maybe it was your voice. I got to be careful. I was kind of like, yeah, starting to relax. We don't want to be getting relaxed on the show. Not on this show. So what did you think about that little clip just now? I mean, I seen that, and I listened to it earlier today, and I'm like, because at first I thought it was going to be, you know, well, maybe this is good, maybe this is bad. You know, I think these scientists are Fruit Loops.
Yeah, I think so, too. They're just perpetuating the same old tired propaganda.
Well, I mean, first off, I've tried to explain this to NASA people before. You can't look at this from a human point of view. Like the first guy says, well, biologically, yeah, I would think any race that was smart enough to get here has already thought about biological contamination. As far as a robot contacting us first, yeah, if they're at the level of evolution that we are, I believe that's how we will meet them. But if they're, say, on the magnitude of some of the races, there's no need for robots. They just come pick your ass up and take a look at you. There's no need for it. And it's less chance that something's going to go wrong if you do it yourself. So I'm not buying that. And then that guy said about, oh, it ain't going to change the way you eat. My ass, it's going to change everything on the planet.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But that's just limited thought from limited minds. And but it's always a problem with scientists. You know, I've met many, many of them over the years. And with the exception of very few, like Michio Kaku and maybe a few others, you don't find that most scientists have good imaginations. I remember reading, I was like 16 years old, when I read The Guy Who Invented the Laser. And he said he got the idea from a sci-fi program, like the 1920s Buck Rogers or something. But wherever he got it, he said that's where he got the idea from. I have heard countless inventors and countless scientists say, oh, I got the idea from Star Trek or from a sci-fi show or from a Babylon 5. I'm like, really? So they're brilliant. But they don't really see beyond their own brilliance, I guess is what I'm saying. You know, if there's not some other light, they're just kind of running around in a – they're like the proverbial hamster chasing the wheel. They never actually get anywhere. So they need that outside imagination. Okay.
Yeah, they're problem solvers. And as scientists, they're very efficient problem solvers. So when they're looking at a particular problem and they want to solve the problem, they're really good at that. But as far as being visionary or creative, that's reserved for a much smaller segment of the scientific or other community. And we could make a good case that human beings are here because of extraterrestrial intervention. I tell people lots of times, I said, you want to see an ET, look in the mirror.
I tell them that all the time, too.
Yeah, we have the DNA within us. And I think Zachariah Sitchin made a very good case for that with the case of Adam's alien genes, which is an article out on the web, you know.
We've been introducing more and more stuff over the last, you know, we've got the gray, the reptilian, the human studies. I think the human studies amassed more than 6,000 human contactees have taken. The reptilians, I think, is around 3,000 or 4,000. The grays, I'd actually have to go look. It was around 4 or 5 last time I checked, but I'd have to go check. These were studies started 4 years ago by November Hansen, and she actually put out a book on the gray study, but we've left them continue on. The human study was done by one of ICAR's splinter groups in Brazil, and they interviewed, it was 5,500 human contactees, and it's amazing the amount of information there is. I mean, it's just overwhelming, and that's what triggered the blood type study, which went viral all across the – I love how many people use ICAR's blood type study and act like it's their own. I've heard people on Coast to Coast. Mm-hmm. They're quoting our numbers. Actually, I've heard them quote me word for word, Nair. I'm like, you got to be shitting me. You're not even going to mention my name. Come on. But you can't let that kind of stuff bother you. But there's a lot of data out there. But a lot of our premises is that, you know, Zachariah and a few others, I agree with the Sumerian connection, because it looks like, you know, according to Sumerians, it looks like a race came here, took something from here, and created a race. Well, first they just came here and lived and created a race like themselves, but then they decided the seven creations of man, with not the last creation not being just like us, but real close, like Adam and Eve. They would have been like that. They were able. Matter of fact, it's almost a quote from what the Bible says. If you listen to the Sumerian, this was 4,000 years or 3,500 years before the Christian Bible. It says stuff like they knew how to procreate, they knew how to name the animals, the plow the fields. They never questioned anyone's authority. This is Adam and Eve, by the way. The same description is given to them in the Bible that is given to the Sumerian people from the first creation. They say that the reptilians came in, started stealing their women, raping their women, and the children were born differently. Initially, everybody thought that maybe they looked different, but that's not what it was. They acted different.
Mm-hmm.
They just simply acted different. So we know those two for sure we share DNA with. And, of course, everybody and their mama figures that Grays came in sometime after that and introduced their DNA. So when you start thinking about the three DNAs, and then you start thinking about all the contactees there are on the planet, and you start thinking things like – and we introduced this in the field, which made people crazy, because no one ever talks about this. A gray contactee marries a reptilian contactee. They have children. Who's going to abduct that child? That child later on marries a human contactee. Who's going to abduct that child? What group do they belong to? Well, but that's a whole new species now, because it's back right back into other ones. Well, this has happened literally tens of hundreds of thousands of times over the last few thousand years. Yes, we are, for the most part, at least the ones that are being abducted are definitely an alien race. We may be humans, but we're not native to this damn planet like they would like us to think of. I mean, we're native because originally we were put here, but most of our DNA does not come from here, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
It seems to be outsourced. How's that? Is that better, outsourced?
I think that that's a good point, but I do think that there are markers that are definitely Earth genetic markers in with us, too. Otherwise, I don't think we would adapt so well here as we have.
Well, I agree with that for the simple fact that we share common DNA with all the animals on the planet. So that I agree with. But my problem is one of the things we came across when doing all this research, you see, the blood type study started out as something else. I was looking for something about blood. When I found out that there was anomalies, and then when I started asking contactees where I found that the majority of them were Rh negative. And I mean an overall majority. It's not that positive don't get abducted. They do, but the large majority of contactees are Rh negative, and there's only 15% of the world's population. So that was significant to even find that. You know, it showed us something that, they're interested. Either they're changing us for this, or they're interested in this, one or the other, or both. It's probably both, to be honest with you. But I don't think most people realize – how significant Rh was. I mean, it's you know, O negative is the only universal donor. It's the purest form of blood known to man, and it's what we do all of our research on because it's so pure. Without this, we would have never made it to where we are in science, and it's not even, as far as we know, it just popped up out of the blue 25,000 years ago from nowhere. Yeah. That in itself suggests some kind of alien intervention. And then, you know, knowing that we have the humans, the reps, and the grays, that may explain the A, B, and O.
Mm-hmm.
But I agree that there is some kind of common tie with us on a planet, but I'm not even sure if maybe it wasn't originally from somewhere else, like Mars or something, because recently a group of scientists have got together. They prove now that when Mars was alive, it wasn't ejecting material to our planet. So it's possible that some life there did come, or some of the life from here did come from there. But more importantly, everybody forgets this, and I don't know why. The human biological clock is 24 and a quarter hours. That's what it's set to. That's why every so often your clock has to reset in your head or it gets off for a little while. That's why. It's like a leap year because we got that extra 15 minutes. Earth's biological clock is set to 23 and three quarters hours. The optimal body temperature for a human to live in is 63 degrees Fahrenheit. The optimal temperature on this planet is 73. But Mars, they do believe, 55 million years ago was 63, and it has a 24-hour and a quarter-hour rotation. So we may share a little ancestry with them. So some of that might have been splattered over here and melded with whatever was here, and then aliens came along and said, well, what the hell is this? And, well, we can use that. That kind of looks like it might be intelligent. Let's use that. Mm-hmm. So everything's related, and I do believe the three races that are the most common three races are related to us. God knows what else we're related to, but
I know. I hear 7 of 9's voice in my head saying, "You will adapt."
Yes.
You know.
It's you just never know how this is all going to turn out. But it's reason like talking to you and other people who've had experiences or been involved in this for a while. You know, I meet a lot of new contactees and young, and I know you do too. And a lot of new and young contactees, and they're just getting into it, and it's a lot of the same old 101, 202 kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But for us who've been in this and living this, you know, mm-hmm. we start to get unique perspectives on this. We're mm-hmm. looking from this from different eyes. We've talked to a lot more people. We've done a lot more research. And with you and all the abductees I talk to, it allows me to cheat. I hate to say it that way, but it does. Yeah. You know, because I can pick y'all's heads and then pick everybody else's heads and get in there. And then I'm lucky. I have a big group of people that backs me up. Anytime I say something stupid, they're like, "Really, Joe? Really? Did you really say that on the air, man? Did you really?" But that's just how it goes. No, James just asked, is Naira a contactee? Well, I don't know. How should we classify ourselves? How would you classify as an experiencer?
Definitely as an experiencer, but I'm definitely also a contactee. Because I have a group that is probably more prevalent for me now, and it's what I would call my personal star family, mm-hmm. which would be Lyran extraterrestrials.
Yeah.
And I get empathic messages from them fairly frequently, not all the time. I mean, they're not like, you know, ringing me all the time, but when something's important, they usually have a way of getting my attention.
Well, you know, it's interesting because, you know, it's one of the criteria for IOCAR that you have to be empathic to be considered an abductee, contactee, keeper, experiencer, whatever the label is. But I'm real careful with that now because I didn't realize this before, and I was talking to our UK director, Sasha Christie, and this is a long time ago, a few years back, and we were talking, and I said, "Well, you know, all contact." She said, "I'm not a contactee, Joe. I'm an abductee," and she was very adamant about it. Mm-hmm. And of course, we talked, which, you know, I understand the distinctions, and I understand, you know, you're not willing participant. You want to choke the little gray sucker until he can't walk. But you know, I mean, I understand all of that. It's just I didn't understand in her particular case, but because of her, it led me to do some other research, and we found that in the UK, and just in the UK, by the way. There's a group, it's not a large group, 100, maybe 150 abductees. You remember back in the 70s when we used to talk about classic 101 of gray abduction, dragging you around, kicking you, everybody was mad, fighting the grays, hostile. That's this group. Mm-hmm. But it seems like everybody else's experiences outside of that has changed.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to get your feedback on that because I know you deal with a lot of contactees and a lot of people. And mm-hmm. here, Australia and the United States, and correct me if I'm wrong, seems to be, at least now, seems to be more contactees than abductees, but there it seems to be the other way around. And I don't know why. So some kind of group or something. Who knows?
Well, yeah, I kind of write about that in my book a little bit, you know, the progression from being an abductee to then going to experiencer, which is more mm-hmm. neutral.
Yeah, which
is and then
quite
a contactee, which is more participatory or, you know, positive.
Yeah.
And I don't think that everybody makes that journey.
I agree.
You know, some people, they're an abductee and an abductee and they're an abductee, and that's all there is to it. But, yeah, I think that people, they kind of, it's like me, okay, just take myself as an example, you know. As I was processing my experiences, I was realizing, well, you know what? They did put me back in my own room. I still had all 10 fingers and 10 toes. My head seemed to be screwed on right, and I seemed to be in command of my own faculties. So there was some kind of sense, well, whatever they're doing, I seem to be okay when they're done with me. So at that point, you start to be a little less afraid and a little more compelled maybe to find out what the heck is really going on here. And you get really interested. I mean, when something like this happens to you, like whether it's ETs or whether it's a military abduction, of which I've had both, it takes such a hold of you. You just have to know what the heck happened. How could it happen? You know, what are the circumstances in which this kind of thing can occur? and it just takes hold of your life, and it kind of drags you with it. And I tried to pull away from it, you know, after I had my hypnosis with Bud. I tried to pull back, and I just thought, this is not what I want my life to be about. I'm going back to yoga and health food. And
I like that. I'm sorry.
Yeah. But that worked for a few years, and then finally I just had to dig back into that little black box in the back of my mind where I stuffed all those memories and strange experiences, and I had to start working them through. And that is really what happens when you go digging around in your subconscious to try to figure out what's been happening to you. But it's a worthwhile journey. You know, it can be really crazy making for a while, but it's a very worthwhile journey. And there are more people out there now, including me, that if somebody wants to explore those memories and explore those experiences, they have somebody like me to hold their hand and be a support to them while they do it. I didn't have support, and it made it very hard, very hard.
And I guess in both our cases, and along with some of our fellow friends out there, it is probably one of the reasons we try helping out and giving people support. It's the reason I started this organization and co-founded it with the original founders, which is only two of us left these days. But it's because there was nothing. There was no. We actually hosted the UFO Alien Phenomena group for 10 years. It was 24 hours a day, 7-day-a-week support group for 10 years. It was the only thing like it ever to exist. And the only reason it ever got closed is because we started the UFO Paranormal Radio Network, and now it's United Public Radio Network, and that chat room took over the old one. So you don't see as much support in it, but still, you know, we offer support. We tell people all the time, but it's hard these days because, you know, when I started this, I might get a contactee every 6 months write to me. Mm-hmm. You know, I had to use everybody else's database. You know, 5 years ago, I was probably seeing 4 or 5 a week. Let me tell you what. And I'll have to give you access to this thing. Our abduction, we have 5 or 6 emails. 3 of them is so loaded, it'll take us just like 4 months just to get to the back of the pile.
Wow, yeah.
And it's really changing the game for me, but it's starting to make me feel like MUFON, that we're not we're not keeping up. And by the way, MUFON, I didn't mean that as a personal shot, but I know at one point, Charlie, got overwhelmed and things were going bad all over the place, and I know you're trying to turn that around. But I feel like that. You know, one of the biggest complaints about MUFON was a lot of stuff went in, nothing came out. Well, we do produce a lot outward, but I personally don't feel we're given the quality of support that we should be.
Right.
But, you know, we're only so many of us that can do it. And I got to be honest with you, and you can tell me how you feel about this. I feel better talking to someone else who's had an experience than someone who hasn't.
Yeah, me too. You know, it's culture shock for people that have had these kinds of experiences to try to interact with mainstream culture. And I know that we are. I mean, I know I'm definitely out there interacting with mainstream culture from time to time here in my hometown. But I prefer the company of other people who have had experiences because then I can just relax and be myself, and I know I'm not going to say anything that's going to upset them.
Yeah, I'll send them off on a tangent. No, I agree. That's how I feel. I have friends that have never had experiences, and they are good friends of mine. But for the most part, I just feel more comfortable with other people who have had experiences. And it is nice to just go sit down somewhere like, you know, we'll go out to the beach and hang out and – yeah, do a little sky watch and do a little ball and fire and whatever. If something happens, it does. If it doesn't, well, that's cool too. You know, it's just nice to be there. But I was thinking when you were talking earlier, you know, when I was young and I knew something had happened, but I wouldn't, you know, I was off, you know, nah, I ain't gonna do this. And then I met some other contactees and I kind of sort of started looking into this. I noticed when I used to fight it, and I hate to say this aloud, but when I used to fight it, it seemed like my life was always a catastrophe. Mm-hmm. In every possible way you could think of, from money to love, this anything. And then somewhere along the line, I said, you know what? I'm going to try to go with the flow. And the more I learned to go with the flow, the better my life seemed to flow. And I hate to say that because I don't want to give people the wrong idea, but for me personally, that's how it's been. I don't know if it's been like that for you, but for me, it's been like that.
Yeah, it's been like that for me too. It's been a little different since publishing the book because I feel like I've spent 14 years kind of standing back and looking at the big picture.
Yeah.
And then all my little research pieces that I put together and put into the book. And one of the things that I've said many times down, at least through the last 10 years, is I feel like, you know, people are worried. One of the big questions is, what if we have an alien invasion? You know, what if they come and they seem like they're good at first, but then they turn out to be really bad and blah, blah, blah. And I said, well, I said, first off, I wouldn't really worry that much about it because I really feel like we've already been invaded by extraterrestrials that did not have our best interests at heart. And
that's
I think that we are seeing the effects of that in our society, economically, politically, environmentally, and everything else like that. And the more that I've looked at the issue, the more I think it's extra dimensionals, like these archons people are talking about, rather than bona fide extraterrestrials, so to speak. So it's hard to make those distinctions because extraterrestrials travel through dimensions too, so
yeah.
They could also be considered extra dimensional.
Well, the grays do for sure, but I.
Yeah. So the these entities that I'm talking about are not like us. I guess they're not organic. As I am learning about it, I'm just started reading John Lash's book, Not in His Image, because I want to learn more about these things. Because whatever's going on this planet, for whatever reason, I've spent 14 years with this material, and I have a grasp of certain things, and I'm hoping that by studying the problem that I can find more solutions. Because I go both to the esoteric and to the very practical down-to-earth mm-hmm. stuff and try to make a synthesis of the two.
Well, that's kind of the way you got to do it. I mean,
you've
got to kind of walk in between because we have science on one hand, like we were listening to earlier, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody explained to me, why does everyone assume that E.T. is sweet, loving, kind? Look, it's not that I don't think there's good aliens out there, and maybe not in the way we understand good, but still.
Mm-hmm.
But every time I listen to somebody, even in this article, they're assuming any aliens that come here won't be hostile. Well, we're a pretty hostile planet. What makes you think that these aliens aren't hostile? And I don't mean hostile in a way they're going to wipe us out, but hostile like Nahir and I were just talking about. They may have been a long time screwing around with stuff.
Yeah.
It's hard to say. And then when you start bringing in interdimensional stuff, I got a friend of mine who's that's his specialty. I stay out of it because, frankly, I got enough on my plate as it is.
Yeah.
If every now and then we cross, like we were working a gray case where there was some other type of alien involved, and we actually lapped over in our research right there. But because of some new stuff that came out in the last 7 or 8 years, thanks to a couple of our new directors, we have more and more of these people on board these ships doing all this stuff in these ships and being involved with different things. But they'll tell you, you may not see these aliens here, but they do tell you there are other aliens on these ships, some of them in the capacity we are, about the same level of technology, being done basically the same things, but they don't look like us. They're different. But they're basically the same as us. And then they talk about other aliens and that are coming and going. And it sounds like a mirage of different stuff. I mean, there's got to be some kind of rules because we don't see all of them here, but still. But then when you add dimensional, anything outside of our norm or anything, then you start adding just tens and thousands of more. Then it gets really complicated, but you can't.
Yeah, it's overwhelming.
Yeah, and you can't, and there's no possible way to rule it out. You know, it's like the other day, a friend of mine wrote to me about, what was that TV show? What was that? That Goofy guy, Sliders, that's the name of it. Goofy
mm-hmm.
show. It was Goofy show. Cute little mm-hmm. show. It was Goofy. That's why I didn't make it. He wrote to me, he said, well, you know, Joe, if there's all these different dimensions, can't these aliens be doing this in all these dimensions? Can't other ones be coming in? I said, that's quite possible. I said the grays, on one hand, could be abducting across multiple dimensions, the same species. Doesn't even have
mm-hmm.
different species.
I said
they have the ability to cross dimensions, so they may actually be doing it themselves. But no one ever stops to think that there could be other types of aliens inside those dimensions coming here. But then Earth doesn't necessarily have to have evolved into humans. And that's something I think everybody forgets. It's quite easy for there to be several Earths here with several different types of aliens that are back visiting us.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just first off, yes, James, I know there's no way to prove it, but still, you can't rule any of it out. So, you know, I stick to what I know best, and I let all y'all, you know, work on other stuff, but
sure,
that's why we do these shows. That's why you come on, and other people come on, and tell us what you've been doing, what you've been finding.
Yeah, well, I realized in my book that I was talking around, in parts of the book at least, I'm talking around the whole issue of archons and these extra-dimensional entities that could be causing a lot of trouble here. And so I didn't mention any of it in my book, but I have definitely started looking at it since I finished the book, just because I want to know who the real troublemakers are on this planet and yep. start addressing a way to work with that, because we got serious environmental problems on this planet, and all the other ones are secondary, as far as I'm concerned, to environmental problems, because we depend on our environment to live. But we got such serious problems going on this planet that I just feel like kind of compelled to look and see what I can learn and what kind of things I can do.
Winning's everything. That's why you play the game.
And
improvement is
really
the only option for me. The way I practice my movements is to simulate without really thinking about it, so I have to react and drop the dime. You have to be dedicated to get through failures, because they're going to happen. To this day, I continue to get better and better and better. I won't be satisfied until I win a championship.
Go to facebook.com/degreemen to see more.
What do you think? I mean, we do have a lot of different stuff going on. I don't know about fear, though.
Well, I've kind of walked that path, you know. At first, you know, I was really afraid of the Greys, and I was really mad at them. You know, I mean, when I was a little girl, I used to think, you know, they could think to me, and I could think back to them, and they were saying, and I was thinking to them, and I was thinking, you know, if I ever get up off this table, I'm going to break in half and watch your fluids run out, you know.
If I had a quarter for every time I heard that, I could retire. Go ahead.
Yeah. So I was pretty upset, and I was scared. And then finally, the fear faded, and there was
Good morning.
A bit of more curiosity.
This is the Lois J. Wetzel Show, and I'm your host and executive producer, Lois Wetzel, coming to you from where I happen to be in the world at the moment.
It's strange. It's like,
I'm the author of 3 books available on Amazon and Kindle, Akashic Records, Case Studies of Past Lives, Edina, Energy Medicine from the Stars, and Sacred Journeys and Vision Quest. On my website, hotpinklotus.com, I offer many free things, including free meditations and mini courses, plus an email newsletter on metaphysics, spirituality, and this ever-changing reality we are now co-creating. I've been sending out free email newsletters for over 15 years, and I invite you to go to my website to check it out. Besides writing my books, I still do intuitive consultations and readings from the Akashic Records, including past lives and life mission readings. All the details on these are on my website, hotpinklotus.com. With these radio shows, I'm creating a free archived audio library available at any time, day or night, to anyone on Earth with access to the Internet. Sometimes these shows will be me talking about what I know or what I do, but most of the time it will be other experts, usually authors, but experts in their respective fields sharing what they know and what they do. I invite you to register for Blog Talk Radio because it's free, and if you do that, you can mark my show as a favorite or get reminders of upcoming shows and participate in the chat. The call-in number for this show is 347-945-5309. You can phone in or call in using Skype if you want to listen like that. Thank you for being here with us today.
Each quadrant, what you'll find is, you may find someone like yourself or someone else. There'll be one or two people that are centered. There'll usually be 4, 5, 6 people circling them, and there'll usually be 14, 18 around them, 40, 50
well,
around
morning,
them.
But it'll go
I'm
going to be talking with Niara Isley, author of a new book, Facing the Shadow, Embracing the Light, about her experiences in the military as a radar operator, and also what she learned from certain abduction experiences she had while in the military.
And then, you know, like another
and
friend of mine,
in her healing process,
and,
how
she,
agree
with the way she
came
comes
to understand things
it,
that,
I do agree that they do
quite possibly
in your life and change stuff
she might not have otherwise understood.
Extent, I should say.
She's an expert in exopolitics.
But
I've
got to be honest with you, when I fought him
and
hard,
that's what
it
I
want to
focus
started,
on now is the part
this,
of her book. Facing the Shadow
and really
Embracing the Light,
and actually
near the end, where she's talking about her understanding of consciousness, because she explains it brilliantly, and the relationship of consciousness, human consciousness, to what's going on in the world right
living,
now. So I'm really happy to have her here today.
Much
Hi,
better lifestyle. I don't even want to say.
Thank you so much for having me, Lois. I'm really happy to be here with you.
And not just money-wise,
well, I'm happy to have you back again. Those of you who are interested, there are two other interviews that I've done a couple of years ago with Niara that are both equally fascinating.
Not,
and before I forget,
grade,
you can get this show on iTunes.
Host body, so
okay.
You don't know
so,
when you die if you're going to actually die
or not.
Where do
you want
to
start?
That kind of bothers me a little bit.
This is where your
start?
Well, give me your opinion on this. We
if,
know about,
if people are listening for the first time, I guess I could recap my experiences because it was really out of my experiences. Became my passion for trying to, in some small way, contribute something that will make this world a better place
and
make people, hopefully, freer.
Well,
and with a, you know, a much more
copies of us or these clones.
Unlimited capacity
really
to seek
to like
their own
a host
growth
body,
and understanding and happiness
training,
and joy.
That talk about that
and we have a lot of forces in our world right now
training.
That are trying to prevent that. And
so
I guess I'll start with my experiences, just a little bit of a recap.
Places like that, you know, we just couldn't
having a conversation
out.
With a friend some years ago, you know, back in the early 90s,
and
through our conversation discovered that I was missing about 3 months or more of my life, but at least 3 months,
about 75 different contacts
from when I was in the U.S. Air Force in 1980. I was a radar operator, which was surface air missile radar and anti-aircraft artillery radar.
That could be good.
And it was...
I mean, you believe in
and I couldn't remember anything about
entity,
working at the Tonopah facility.
Yeah,
I could remember later working at Tulecha Peak, but I couldn't remember
it's
anything about working
call.
At Tonopah. And this is intensely frightening because I have
sure
a really good memory, a really excellent memory.
Well,
and, when it had been tampered with. So I investigated that through hypnosis with Bud Hopkins
and
found
something I'd like to add to that, if we
that I had indeed had some experiences,
but
and they were terrifying.
Bodies,
they were not with extraterrestrials.
I don't know.
They were with,
my viewpoint has evolved so much
and,
that
out in the middle of the night on the
Nevada
desert.
When I see certain things, I run into something new.
Test the radar on UFOs.
Way back when, 10, 15 years ago, I run into
tracked, and then
like,
they took
it
us
like
back to what I think was either Area 51 or an underground facility at the Tonopah compound. And once I was there,
even
I was
looking at some of the things that I'm looking at now,
injected with some kind of experimental chemical.
I'm looking at it, you know,
really
with that attitude
shock,
of, okay, this is a problem that needs to be solved.
Through some very terrible effects.
And what is the nature of the problem?
And then
you know,
I was sexually assaulted right after I was just barely recovering
like
from the injection experience.
And then what
when I was sexually assaulted.
Knowing what's
and for those
true about it, then what remedies
too
can be applied.
Of an experience
and, so that's
to even
kind of the approach that I take to it now.
Or to even
is,
be real.
There's not too much that comes
in my book. I give a tremendous
so
amount
I'm
of background
if somebody found themselves
on
trauma-based
mind control,
after they thought they passed away,
other aspects of around
then
that
that's
phenomenon.
Be a whole new life for them.
Because
an
organization came out called the False Memory Syndrome Foundation.
They will
cast
have to deal with
doubt
it,
on memories that people retrieve
in one way or another.
And I have gone into looking at False Memory Syndrome Foundation in my book and revealed its ties, as other researchers have. I'm not the first one, but other researchers, and I have followed up with revealing how they have connections to the CIA, an organization with a lot to hide, and I'm sure that they want to discredit people who have memories emerging from hypnosis.
Or taking the ones that they think
so
can deal with it.
I had these
experiences
in that 3 month time period. I was also put on either an AT craft or a back engineered craft.
We've heard many, many times of her contactees talk about a couple of different
worlds. One of them
particularly interesting
the duration of the week I was there, not allowed to sleep, fed very poorly, and exhaustion and things like that are another aspect of trauma-based mind control to help with people having gaps in their memory.
You know, when someone dies, they describe seeing
so
their family.
So there's a ton of research in the book to back up everything that I've said. And for any listeners who have not really realized that we have based on the moon,
right.
And there are ET
really?
Bases on the moon. There's a tremendous amount of testimony coming out over the last 3 or 4 years about the moon, about bases on the moon.
There's a lot of near-death experience research that says people have these beautiful experiences.
I'm just one story among many. Mine is a little more remarkable because I have this memory of actually being
there. That says that
so,
when
I hope to do some drawing.
Your soul is kind of sucked
that,
up
too.
Into this recycle bin, and then
kind of
you recycle back to Earth.
In a nutshell.
Because we're all trapped here.
At this
here,
point,
you know?
I want to say for the listeners who are going, scratching their heads going, seriously, bases on the moon? Because there may be a few of those, although I've got some pretty enlightened listeners.
I'm sure you do.
At the moment of birth. You know, they won't listen again.
You've already got many, many witnesses that have described dying before.
This
one gentleman who had a heart attack and died three times in the tail gives his description.
Claims that she was invited to go live. This is all on the back side of the moon. We never see the back side of the moon. If it rotates around the Earth, we only see one side.
Through the tunnel, and then seeing a bunch of
family
and people standing around
and be one of the people
they
were going to use for breeding.
Your family is standing there. I was like, oh, shit, wait a minute.
And she declined, but she has said that this happened to her. So there are all kinds of people out there claiming that there are these bases on the back side of the moon.
There was a hypnosis session I had a couple of years ago where a friend of mine, now I'm certified to do Dolores Cannon's hypnotherapy technique now. I had a friend, and we did a
I'm
training.
I'm sure you felt,
and in this,
I know because I've read the book,
session
which is
that
extraordinary,
I had,
and I highly recommend
I
it,
was actually, that you felt, I had finished an Earth lifetime,
a lot of
and I went
fear
to Arcturus,
and
they actually had,
all that
like, host
stuff. And how did you
there?
Keep up? Because most people, they can get
stuck
and that kind
of
thing,
and
really have
into it,
bad effects on their lives.
And they had those bodies there for
their lives, trying to track people down
and get even with
them.
That
but
had been
you didn't respond
having
like that.
A stressful
can you talk about that a little
ago, and they could walk into one
yeah,
of the
well,
host bodies, and then they could
I'm
have
not sure.
like
I
a
guess,
spiritual retreat. To kind
I don't
of
guess anymore, really. I should
lifetime.
Eliminate that. I am
was,
a starseed. I am one
that
of those
was a fascinating,
volunteer
fascinating
souls. That Dolores Cannon has talked yeah. about in her work, where you hear the call, you come to Earth, and you take on a human incarnation
for
a specific
purpose.
And as I wrote my story, all of this came into very sharp focus. I mean, I knew that it was there. I knew that that was an aspect of who I am.
But they always tell
from
them it's
the,
a great life.
For a long time. But when I wrote it down in the book,
they
it just came into
thought,
absolute crystal clear focus
and
clarity.
By thought,
because
which
I realized
you,
that when,
like
I was,
someone like me,
when I was born,
I
as soon as I was old enough, I was spiritual from the moment of birth, pretty much. And I couldn't understand why the people around me were so dysfunctional or violent or whatever. You know, I had a family that was pretty challenging to grow up in. And
I
really
was
kind of
confused
about the place
that
I suddenly found myself in. But as soon as I was old enough to have a library card and get myself to the library, it's almost like I hit the ground running to learn as much about this planet and how things work here in science and everything else like that as I possibly could from a very early age. And I didn't realize at the time that that was going to provide the foundation for all the things that I have done and experienced and tried to put into my book recently. And writing the book was just a revelatory experience because
I guess they just like to keep
you know that there's dots that connect in your life, but writing it all down and looking at all of it in a storyboard manner
the creator
was just,
in ourselves,
like I said, it was a revelation
we're,
to see just how many dots connected. In fact, I put together that
just
before going into the military, I had that dream about an ET crash and how it worked with a general
and there were times I went
diagram
very deep in meditation
for how it
and time and space dissolved away.
These, six,
and it was an experiential feeling that is very hard to describe.
And,
but because of
and
those,
then the, all the energy coming out about the Taurus and zero point energy and everything else like that.
Core,
I mean, you put all those things together, and you know that it's not an accident. It's not just a random coincidence. You know that something is going on because there's just too many things connecting.
Can roll out in
and
a linear
that's what it was
fashion.
Like to write that book and,
from beginning to end.
Something being orchestrated is. Is
that's
the way
I
would put it.
Too.
There
you know, it's funny,
are other
yeah,
beings,
I had to quit doing
whether we can see them or not, that are
me down. I would
guiding
start floating
us.
Around a house and stuff.
Right. So I would just say to the listeners that
yeah.
I did
yeah,
not
I told her. I
immediately
I
jump
tonight.
To the starseed explanation.
I
raised myself to be very left-brained, very analytical, because religion didn't really give me what I was looking for as far as spirituality. So I thought, well, just leave religion alone and focus on the science for a while. So I became very left-brained, very analytical. Just if I knew that if I was going to compete in the world, I had to really have a sharp mind. So I really tried to make my mind sharp. My school grades did not reflect that, however, because as many indigos and starseeds are, they get pretty frustrated and bored with the school system. And often they don't do all that well in school, even though they are really intelligent. So,
that was really, really weird.
You know, I definitely fit that part
and,
of it as
and
well.
The weirdest part about
and,
it is nobody talked about it afterwards.
It was as I moved through the healing
like
process of healing from the trauma
like
that I was subjected to,
and
it's like peeling away layers. I just thought, you know, I don't want to be full of hatred. I don't want to be full of rage.
Okay, yeah,
and in
the
part,
name of the
rage
book is called
takes
Facing the Shadow, Embracing the Light, A Journey
you know,
of
it
Spirit
can kill you,
Retrieval
it can wear
and
you out. It can give you a
and
stroke.
You can get it
so
at my
I
website,
knew that I didn't want to,
Facing the Shadow, Embracing the Light.
I need to have
com,
to deal with
or you can get it
the emotional
Amazon
fallout of the experiences
the
without getting
Kindle
stuck
edition.
In it. And the one thing that really has
so
helped me is my connection to nature.
I like the idea. It's in a hardcover.
When I really need comfort, lots of times I will go out in nature and I will actually just lay down on the earth and imagine that I'm in the arms of my mother.
Well, I got
because,
the other day I
was it brings me a lot of comfort. I just feel life all around me and it's really been an amazing resource for me in healing and staying.
What do you think?
As straight
I said,
as I could as myself
me,
during
I put a headset on top
healing.
Of CDs.
And,
you asked the wrong person.
I said
I'm a little
you know,
more involved into the modern technology these days. I just plug it in.
It was a pretty
way, but,
powerful thing. So as I peeled away the layers
opinion,
of,
yeah, my opinion on Kindle is this.
And inquired more and
if
more
we lived in a society
in
that was
more
free
esoteric
and open
ways,
and
why would I choose
censorship,
a lifetime like
so on
this?
So
why would
I
choose a lifetime
of
such severe, horrendous trauma?
But in
and
the
answer
we live
that
in,
came
if everything
was
went to digital readers,
that I was indeed
it would
a
be a great,
soul,
great,
a Darcy,
great way to burn books
came
without
here
flames
and contracted
and all
to have
the information that we read so that we never get truth anymore.
And I was actually guided into
and,
them in
and
a particular way.
Point,
so the very family
yeah.
I chose
yeah.
to be born in imprinted
like,
me with
know,
a certain level of trauma, which then attracted the other experiences that I was to have in this lifetime.
We
to fulfill
need
my
paper
soul
trail,
contract.
Guys. We need
because we know through the law of attraction,
like,
you attract what you're in vibration.
We invade Ukraine. It gets stupid. They launch a
resonance
weeks.
With.
We launch
mm-hmm.
back EMP
and so
having
the trauma in childhood,
bag,
I think,
enough.
Helped me
yeah.
to fulfill the soul
money.
Contract later
and
with the trauma
I
that
so
I went
so
through in the military.
How to work
and that may be an interesting application of the law of attraction. For the soul's
now,
growth,
I
but I really think
truck
that it's very valid.
It's got a distributor,
so,
it's
you know,
digital.
The starseed and the
balance
of your soul
stuff
was kind of left after I had peeled
that,
away everything
you know,
else. And I have come to really accept it.
I hear you.
And
I
don't need to convince anyone of it, because someday when I depart this lifetime, all the answers will be there and I'll know.
Experiences as well.
But
remember, it's
504-273-7379. And I'm really happy with who I am today. I wouldn't trade away any part of my experiences because of who I've become as a result of them. And another thing that's been real interesting is coming to mind is the books of the Dune series by Frank Herbert and how trauma was actually used to awaken the clones or the Golas to their original memory. And it's really interesting that trauma caused such an awakening of consciousness.
If you are listening to the show and wish to join us in the chat room, visit paltalk.com. Go to the social issues, select other, and enter the UFO Paranormal Radio Network.
Hello, this is Angela Thomas with a message about living life to the fullest.
I had had enough.
Well, you drove out there into the middle of nowhere and had some sort of loud verbal display challenging ET in general out in the middle of nowhere?
Oh, yeah, that's what I was doing. I actually had a pistol in my hand at the time. I was really ticked off. When I was having this fit, I was waving the gun in the air, okay, and I had this fit. And at this moment, I said, okay.
Was a Louisiana man named Montaldo. Folks around called him Six Gun Joe. Worked with ICAR, don't you know? Investigating UFOs. Out for a drive with a gal one night, they stopped to check out a reporting site. When an alien lit right there on the ground, commenced to throw in his weight around. Now, old Six Gun didn't take too kindly to that kind of thing. Especially without Vaseline or anything like that, you know. Seriously. Well, Six Gun looked that critter right in the eye and said, any last wish before you die, y'all? Reach for his gun, quick as a twitch, and said, fill your claw, you son of a bitch. Now, a legend spread across the land about this pistol-waving man. But if you're from space or from Earth below, you don't give no lip to Six Gun Joe.
Welcome to UFO Undercover with your host, Joe Montaldo.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome back to UFO Undercover. I hope you all enjoyed the first hour of the show with myself and Mr. Isley. Neil, join us quick, shortly. Sorry, I'm not came from. But you'll join us here. And, you know, guys, it's always going on that you keep track of, but I was thinking about this when you're talking at the book. So much of this UFO stuff that goes on that people, you know, write about UFO sighting this, UFO sighting that, never changes anything. And I was thinking about something. I read an article earlier today. Is it choppy? Hold on, let's see what's going on. Okay, let's see. Why are we choppy? Okay. Okay, is that better? Testing. Much better, huh? Okay, not sure what happened there, guys, but hey, we fixed it, so. Sometimes tech goes a little crazy, but it's fixed now, so. Yeah, I'm glad somebody let me know. That's the best way to do it. If I can't hear it, I can't fix it, because when everybody else shows on, I'm listening. When mine's on, all I can hear is myself and whoever's in the queue with us. So I'm glad that's taken care of, because that would have drove everybody else crazy. But just remember, guys, If ufology does not start to embrace abduction research or does not start dealing with the contactee, it will never, ever get anywhere. I've been involved with this field for almost 30 years now, and it's no different than it was 30 years ago than it is today. There's a lot more abduction research being done, but that's only because people like myself and here and a lot of other contactees and investigators are forcing the issue.
the old ufology and even the new ufology does not want to talk about abductions. I mean, there's only what MUFON's got a small little abduction group, and I'm not really hearing them doing much. And I know there's one or two other groups out there, but really, there's nobody really doing what we're doing. So, gosh, you've got to get on the ufologists. If you keep buying the same old books and the same old stupid stuff about lights in the skies and UFOs, it will never change. Mm-hmm. I looked at the last five or six conferences. I didn't see one contactee there. Come on. That's what this is about. It's about the contactee. I mean, anybody can see a light in the damn sky. It doesn't mean anything. And this is Bob, okay? Walt Anderson is a friend of mine. I met Walt at a very young age. He's a personal hero of mine. Even Walt will tell you, you can't keep chasing lights in the sky. You're not going to get the answer. The answer can only come from three places. It can come from the government if you can talk Mr. Barack Obama into telling you, which I don't think so. It can come from the aliens themselves or the contactees. That's it. But chasing lights in the sky will never give you that piece of information. What do you think? You're going to capture an alien? Get the hell out of here. That would be nice. I mean, that's one of the reasons I go to the conferences is so I can connect with other researchers. Now, fortunately, I got the show now, so I can always call them on the phone, or over the years I've met enough of them that I can call them at home. But that's one of the reasons if I do go to a conference, it's where I go. You know, other than the lecture, I go to talk to the people. It's not the lectures themselves. I got to be honest. There's not much in a lecture I'm going to hear that I haven't already heard before. But,
yeah.
It's the conversations at the bar or at dinner or sitting in the lobby. Those are the ones that have a lot more meat and potatoes. We're just two UFO people just chit-chat.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
There's a lot more information being exchanged. So I do like going for those reasons. And, you know, I always tell people when I'm talking to different people in the field, I'll tell them, oh, no, I'm just chatting. This isn't anything, you know, for the station. Because some people get worried. They know I do abduction research, but they also know I do radio. So sometimes they're a little worried that I might be, no. I'll tell you if it's going to be for the radio.
Mm-hmm.
And that way you have an option of what you're going to say. I got to say, I have been paid, I want to ask you about this. I've been paid several times for people who have come up, and you know, they want to do a video or this, that. I've never seen any of them, by the way.
Hmm.
About 11 times someone's paid me to talk for an hour or two to do videos, but I've never seen any of them. So maybe I'm just too ugly to put on the screen.
I don't know.
I know, it's kind of funny though.
Well, you're in my book. I put you in the gratitude section because I've so much appreciated you having me on the radio down through the years.
You come on anytime, and I'm gonna make sure we get you back on later in the year. Get the book a little time to get circulated. I got to get it in my head, so I stop calling it the book. I keep getting emails, Joe. The book. What's the book?
Okay.
Guys, I haven't read it yet, but I'm going to get it soon. So I'll when
well,
I
yeah,
get it.
It's going to be there pretty soon. I've been looking at the tracking number. It's getting there.
When it gets here, I'm going to read it, and I think we got a free spot in like 5 or 6 weeks. I'm going to bring Nira back. We're going to talk about it a little more. But remember, guys, The idea is not to give the book away. The idea, and I don't mean money-wise, I mean what's in the book.
Yeah.
You know, we want you to, we want to entice you, but we don't want to tell you the whole book. We want you to go read the damn thing. People asked me one time if I would do a thing on the site where we would review all the books so they didn't have to read them. I'm like, get the hell out of here.
Yeah.
I was like, that's not going to happen. And thanks to people like Matters and Patterns in the room and a few other of our close friends like Gene and James, you know, I lost like 700 books after Katrina.
Mm-hmm.
And thanks to all of these people, they have been restocking my books and my CDs and all. And you know, Linda's a bigger reader than I am, but still, I like, it's like heaven. Like, the other day, there was something in one of Richard Dolan's books that I wanted to go look up. And I had, somebody had told me he'd said it, and I wanted to verify because it didn't sound like something Richard would say. So I wanted to look, and then I realized I only had two of them, not three of them, because one of them got eaten by the storm.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll have to get that one back. But I'm looking forward to yours. And let's see, we've got a couple of questions. Let me get these out right quick. Who is this? Steph? No, who's that? Let's go over here. Christina, hello, Christina. Let's see, where are you from, Christina? New Zealand. Damn, hey down there in Kiwi land. How you doing over there? It's afternoon. Huh? What is it, like Thursday lunchtime, 1 o'clock or something? She wants to know, oh, okay, she's asking about what happened to you in the military. She's actually got a two-part question. She said she wanted you to talk a little bit about what went on in the military and how you dealt with it. And she also wanted to know if you knew anything about KW, who's, and you probably know who I'm talking about, who's kind of retired from the field now. I don't know if we should talk about her, guys and girls.
Yeah.
She actually asked me to remove all of her stuff from the website. So,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'll make this real short and sweet, and then I'll let Nair answer this. Kay is a mutual friend who was a military abductee and an abductee, but had, let's just say, extenuating circumstances and has disappeared from,
mm-hmm,
well, from the field. How's that? That's nicely as I can say. I love her to death, but I'm not going to put her on the spot.
I feel the same way. I wouldn't want to put her on the spot or, you know, violate her privacy at this point.
Yeah, and I don't know. And, yes, Dean, Melinda Leslie has had military abductions, and she does research them. But right now I think she's doing sky watches in Sedona, Arizona.
Yep, she's very happy there, I think.
I think she is, too. I have to agree with you there. But anyway, they wanted you to talk a little bit about what had happened to you while you were in the military. What branch were you in?
I was in the Air Force.
Okay, that's
US
what I thought.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's what I thought. And I'm going to let you talk in just a second. The reason I asked you that is for some reason when we were talking about you-know-who, it dawned, mm-hmm, on me that like five of y'all were in the Air Force.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but anyway, go ahead. I hate when stuff happens to me at a show like that, and I got to write it down and stuff.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Well, the military experiences are very strange.
To say the least.
So, yeah. So I'll try to make a long story short here because I wrote it all down in my book in great detail and my process around it. So anyway, to make a long story short, in conversation with a friend, we were talking about my time in the military, and I discovered that I had 3-plus months of missing time between January and April of 1980. And with the realization of having the missing time, and I mean not being able to remember anything for at least 3 months and possibly a little more than 3 months. And I couldn't remember the people I worked with. All I could tell you was I worked at Tonopah Electronic Warfare Range, but I couldn't tell you a thing about the people I worked with, the place that I worked, or any other details or information. And the really significant thing about that is that I got involved, romantically involved, with my second husband during that time. And Bud Hopkins, who did my original first hypnosis, he said that that's really weird that you can't remember the romantic time of getting together with someone you married, because usually women remember all those kinds of details. Sure. You know, so it really was pretty strange. So when I had hypnosis with Bud Hopkins, I found that I had been taken out in the middle of the night to test the radar that I worked on extraterrestrial craft, or possibly back in engineered craft, or a combination of the two. And this radar was a surface-to-air missile, anti-aircraft artillery type of radar. And it tracks radar with a little narrow beam so that it's targeted. Basically, if you are able to track an aircraft with that narrow beam, basically you have painted a target on their aircraft that would allow you to shoot it down in a wartime situation. So that's the radar that I worked on. So the these craft could not be tracked. They could not be targeted. After this test was over, we were put on a bus with painted over windows and taken to what I think was either Area 51 or possibly an underground facility at Tonopah that was discussed by William Pollack in his interview with Stephen Greer after he died. That interview was released.
Yeah.
So while I was there, I was injected with an unknown chemical that put my body into shock, and they stuck me in a little room and watched me go through the effects of that injection. And then I was still really very shaken from that injection when I was dragged out of the room and I was sexually assaulted by two security guards. Pretty horrible experience, pretty inhumane, and it's hard for people to accept. It was very hard for me to accept until I studied enough to understand about trauma-based mind control and what it is,
yeah,
and why those kinds of techniques are applied to people.
You know, and it's interesting that you bring that up, because the sexual assaulting I've heard more times than I even really want to admit to.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it seems, and this now, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to take this the wrong way. On a lot of cases I hear, you know, after the fact, I don't know how to explain it. It's like they do all this crap, and all this crap is done, and these people are taking you somewhere, and they just decide, you know. I don't even think it's part of the – I think they just – idiot rapist, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. Or maybe they think they can just get away with it because, oh, this person, you know. But they do it. And I've heard this in many cases, and I've not heard it in other cases. And I have no idea why, but something we have been working on is how – we're trying to figure out a way to see if there's like two or three different groups of people being military abducted. We know that there's a group inside the military itself. Okay, when they're in the military, they're being abducted. We know there's a group outside the military that's being abducted. And then we know there's a group that's had both while they were in and while they were not. Not everybody who's been abducted outside had actually been in the service. But we do seem to have those three groups. And the experiences seem to be slightly different in each group. Like, I hear a lot of things about sodium amethyst. And passive mind scans, and I hate to use the word passive, because the only reason we call it passive mind scans is because it's a low-grade telepathy. But it's not passive in the sense that it can do real crap to your brain. And the bad part about this is, I think, is they go in here and they do these haphazardly try to fill in the blanks, cover stuff, and then here comes your gray along or whatever alien may be abducting you and takes you, and then now they've got this mess of whatever's left in your head from them, and then whatever they're doing on top of it, and you're kind of like, what the? And it's no wonder that contactees get depressed and aggravated.
Oh, yeah.
and
confused.
Mad.
Because
it's too easy to get confused. Matter of fact, Kathleen Maltzman's still mad at me over Betty and Barney Hill.
Oh, well, yeah.
Well,
I wanted to mention from earlier that you were saying that there's a lot of craft that appear over hospitals and graveyards.
Uh-huh.
And I'm thinking that's probably because we don't give our dead too much thought once they're buried or cremated.
That's true. We don't.
Yeah.
That kind of bothered me, too. You know, anytime I think about them taking or going over these hospitals or these graveyards, it always worries me. You know, if they're uploading the consciousness, I can kind of, sort of, maybe live with that at the outskirts. But, you know, there's so many other things that they could be doing.
Yeah.
A la carte going to something entirely different. It just worries me because we're guessing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
When we get to guessing like that, it makes me really, really nervous on why they would do it. Now, experiences several times while you were in the service, right?
The military things, yeah. And probably the most remarkable and controversial part of it was being put on a craft and taken to the moon.
Well, that was kind of cool part there.
It's a cool part, but is it because there was more sexual assault and basically being used as slave labor?
Yeah, well, I was going to say, not any kind of real, not police, but any kind of real authority there that's going to save you. They're going to figure you're up here. What the hell?
Yeah.
It's just a shame that there's a group out there that would do that. It really is, you know, because it's bad enough you got to deal with all this other crap, and then they're going to throw this in on top of it. It just makes me mad. There's nothing I can do about it. I want to say nastier stuff than that, but it really does. It hacks me off because really and truly it puts us in a position where, you know, we're just outright victims. And most humans, there are some humans that like being a victim. I'm not going to argue that fact, but most humans do not. Most of us want to be like, no, get off me. Don't touch me. Don't even touch me nowhere around there, buddy. And it's just how it is. But unfortunately, it doesn't seem how it works. Now, you know, I remember you and I and Melinda did a session. And I know y'all were on Coast as well. And the reason I brought that up is somebody had wrote to me earlier if they could find it. The one that Nira and Melinda did is still available, and I know the one for Coast is still available. It's actually a pretty popular one on Coast, a pretty popular one on our network as well. It's just a good interview.
I have a more recent interview on Coast, too, with George Knapp.
Yeah, I've seen that. I haven't listened to it yet, but I seen it, I believe, yesterday. I was doing something, and it popped up on my screen, and I seen it. So how'd that go? I have never been interviewed by Knapp. I wanted to ask you how that went. Did you like Georgia? Oh, what happened? We're having internet problems. Get out of here. Yeah, are you still there?
I'm still here.
Sorry about that. I guess my internet's being a little... Did I ask you something I wasn't supposed to there?
I don't know.
It just locked up. No, I've never seen it do that before. A little red box popped up and said, you're having connection problems. I'm like, really? That was a bit on the strange side. No, but I know the different kind of MILAB cases, and I know the MILAB's a bad word, military abduction, because it's not always – sometimes it's outright what I'd call Johnny Five military, and sometimes it seems to be – I don't want to call them men in black. It's like military and some executive guys and maybe some government guys, and it's all rolled up to one.
Covert ops types.
Yeah, that's really what I think the men in black are. I think they're just a group. They may use hybrids or something, but I really do think it's like they're probably responsible for most of the MILABs. And it may have started with the government originally, but I think they've lost control of it.
Oh yeah, I think so too.
I don't think the government. I don't think Barack Obama knows what a military abduction is. That's what I should say. And I don't think. Now, somebody asked me, I don't think George Baby Bush did. Now, Daddy Bush, he might have known. You know what? Here's something for both of y'all. Or not both of y'all. Everybody listening tonight, both of them. Ronald Reagan and George Bush Sr. George Bush Sr. was head of the CIA for years. He served as vice president for 8 years and president as 4 years. So it gives him about 20 years in the highest offices in the world, or in this country. He may have known. He must have told Reagan, because Reagan started that, oh, what happens if we get invaded from out of space? Then he started, let's build lasers to shoot down stuff in space. And then he started Pine Gap, the defense of outer space. So this man figured there was something coming. What I find interesting about both of them, of course, we all know that Reagan got Alzheimer's. And basically, once he left office, nobody was getting no information out of him. Daddy Bush, I've noticed, is in about the same state. I know he tries, but I notice they've been keeping him hidden a lot more. They're not letting him see in the public as much. I'm thinking when they get to a certain age, they might idle their minds just to make sure on their deathbed they don't say, guess what, E.T.'s visiting the planet.
Yeah.
Because that would not go over well with everybody else. We'd all be like, really? He might have known. But I don't think they tell every president. I don't think they – I think every once in a while they have to. You know, they get into something – that they have to tell, somebody of authority about. Now I want to ask you, too, when you're writing a book, because, when I'm reading the title, I'm thinking at least part of this, you must have been kind of in a, how do I say this, like a relaxed state. Maybe relaxed isn't the right word. Maybe a cross between empathic and relaxed, if that makes any sense at all.
Yeah. Well, I know the book is in three parts. The first part is about experiences, and the second part is about, what it took to heal, or at least begin to heal. Mm-hmm. And then part three is the awakenings part, where all the insights and realizations I've had from years of research went into that part. I wouldn't say that writing this book was relaxed. It was like push, 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 push. Nothing in my life has ever grabbed a hold of me and just said, you must do this, like writing this book. It was like it grabbed a hold of me and would not let go until it was done. And again, I had to relive a lot of my trauma to try to write about it effectively and accurately. But if there was a relaxed and fun part to write, part three, the awakening section, was very nice. That was a great part to write because that was all the good stuff that's come out of my experiences, you know, from healing, from putting things together, from enlarging my perspective of the world and the universe that I live in. I mean, today I wouldn't trade any part of my life experience away for anything because I'm alive, I'm awake, I am aware, and I really like who I am today, you know. So I wouldn't trade anything away, but it was very hard to go through those experiences.
You know, I have to agree with you there. I don't even through the more traumatic ones, I don't know if I would change any of that because it has made me the man I am today, which is a good and a bad thing. But you know, it's well, I have to be honest about it. You know, I'm not perfect. Linda would be the first one to tell you I'm a pain in the ass, but. And I am ADD and OCD and probably several other things to go along with it.
Yeah, well, I still have post-traumatic stress issues that I deal with from time to time, so I'm not
perfect. I probably have a few of them hidden in there, too. Yeah. But it's. But I do feel, in general, it's made me who I am today. And it's, and overall, in the long run, because now I'm 51, I can say it in the long run, I do feel better for it. And even though I hated it, and even now, I still get pissed every once in a while. Matter of fact, one of the wildest cases, one of the more publicized ones that I ever did, even headed on coast, was when that night they wrote the damn song about the night I lost it out in the swamp with the Grays. You know, it tells you, I'd had enough. That's how the song starts out. Yeah, I'd had enough. I was 33, 34, and I was pissed. And I was drunk to top it off. So I was on like 26 white Russians, and I was hot. Thank God there was witnesses there with me to verify the story. Because I was mad. I was out the car with a gun waving in my hand, screaming, you no good little blankety blankety Grays. You get your blanket. I'd had enough. And I said, you either do what the hell you're going to do, let me go, or I just lost it. And
very glad that happened back then and not in this current political climate.
Oh, God, I'd be in prison now. Because this was actually on NASA's Stennis facility, on their land they incorporate, about a block from their main gate. But it's all rural out there. You can't see it. We were on the side road, but that's how close we were to them. And we've been harassed out there before, but I don't know. I did. I just had enough. And I knew they were in that area a lot, and I knew they were doing a lot in that area, so I said, screw this. I'm going to the source. And it was a very weird night, very weird experience. I remember that night clear. I remember, Eddie, when they said, I still remember Linda and another person sitting in the car were like, they wouldn't turn around because they could see him in the mirror walking up behind me, and I was standing there still screaming. but I did, because I was screaming, and I kept hearing a click sound like dolphins, and nothing was happening. So I said, all right, I'll go put the gun in the car. So I walked up to the car and put the gun out, and I'm all drunk, waving my hands, and I look, I ain't got no more gun. And then that's when I remember Linda must have stepped on the brake lights and it lit up everything red. And there he was in front of me. There was the other two. And here's the two in the car going, what the hell? And I'm like, okay. Yeah, I think you showed me tonight. Didn't alter any memories. Didn't touch any of my memory. I was like, okay, left. That was, you know, and it left an everlasting memory. But it was one of the driving factors that got me where I am today. It was crazy. Now I got to ask you this, right? I wanted to ask you this earlier, and I know I've probably asked you this in the past, but so you had these military experiences, which I really would like to spend some more time on, but when did you get, how can I say this, when did you get the courage to decide to speak about this openly? I hate to ask a woman anything about age, but I'm curious to where it was that it just, where you just had to say, okay, I gotta let this out. I got to talk about this.
Well, I was like in my early 40s when I got the memories back. I might have actually been 40. I'm not good at math, so I'm not sure. I have to count on fingers and toes to get all those years in. But
so it sounds like the awakening age.
Yeah, so that was it, and I, you know, I had these memories come in, and I'm sorry, what was the, where was the question going again?
No, I just wanted to know, you know, what I was curious because the awakening age for most contactees is between 36 and 50, 40 being more common. You see them as early as early 30s, but it's not often. Usually they're still like me, a little angry in their early 30s. So, but you do see them earlier. But for some reason, 40s and 50s seems to be their favorite places to awaken people. And I guess we're more mature. We understand more. We have more control over our fears, our thoughts, our designs. So maybe it's better. Maybe like you and I have, you know, been dealing with this in the back of our heads for a while. You know, so it's no longer a question if it's real. It's just what the hell's going on. And I think that's a big changing point for people like us when it's no longer fantasy.
Yeah, when I decided to go public with this, I mean, I resisted going public for so many years. I thought, well, you know, it's going to piss off my family, and it's going to alienate my friends, no pun intended.
No.
And, you know, I really just thought, I just don't want to do this. You know, I remember thinking right at the very beginning, you know, if I go public with this, the only job I'm going to be able to get is speaking at UFO conferences. You know, well, here I am, you know, doing just that. But, you know, it took me over 14 years to come forward. But the pivotal thought that I had was it just occurred to me one day that by staying silent, I was allowing the kind of abuse that happened to me to go on for other people. And when I had that thought, I just couldn't live with that. And now I also wanted to say this earlier, too. There are a lot more people who have been subjected to mind control coming forward. And there are a lot more super soldiers coming forward who have undergone that kind of trauma-based conditioning to split them into different personalities and you know, generally mess with them, you know, and program them for certain specific purposes. So it's, I mean, more people are coming out now, and that's a really good thing. But I felt like I just had to get my story out there because this is still happening to other people, and any light that can be shed on it is a step towards stopping that.
That's pretty well said. I was going to say something else. But that's just very well said. Randy, it's listed all over. All I typed in was face and shadow, and it came right up. But the title is Face and Shadow, Embracing the Light, A Journey of Spiritual Retrieval and Awakening. I love the awakening in there, by the way. It's easy to find. It's where I'm at right now. It says 1940 on paperback, but I'm sure you shop around.
If you get it from my website, you can get a signed copy if you really would like a signed copy.
There you go.
And then there's a storefront page for Create Space that's also at my website. And if you like me and you'd like me to get a little bit more royalties, you can order a signed copy or a copy from the Create Space page. I get less royalties from Amazon. But by all means, if you want the book and you need the discount, please buy it at Amazon, because I wrote this book for people to read, and that hopefully it will help you make sense of some of the things going on in the world today from a perspective that looks at the whole ET and UFO phenomenon and factors it in.
Yeah. I'm actually on the Barnes & Noble site, by the way. And they only got two reviews on it, but they're both excellent. Check it out, guys.
Mm-hmm.
Hell, you big time girl. You're on Barnes & Noble. Damn. You
I didn't realize. I knew I had good reviews up at Amazon, but I haven't even checked Barnes & Noble.
Yeah, I just was looking for the title for the gentleman to make sure I had the whole title right, and sure enough, there it was. I was like, damn, check that out. That's just crazy. There's a question that came in from, where is this guy? Dennis. Hey, Dennis, where are you located? Dennis is in Corpus Christi, Texas. Wow. Man, hopefully you'll be getting some nice weather down there pretty soon down there in Corpus Christi, baby. You must be one of them high-dogging it. He's asking, are there similarities between your military abductions and other people's military abductions? Well, I'll let you answer that.
There are similar aspects of it. If you're a woman, sexual assault seems to be
some of the things that they do to basically, you know, control you and let you know that you're being controlled. So there are similarities and there are differences depending on what they are wanting to do with you. You know, are they programming you to be a psychic spy, which you're not going to have any memory of in your normal waking life, or are they doing something else? In my case, they took me out in the middle of the night to test the radar on UFOs, but they didn't want me to remember it. So they worked me over with the drugs and the sexual assault, and I'm sure there was more to it than that, because I have wondered, and I don't know why I wonder this, but for some reason it just keeps popping into my head, that when they injected me with that chemical, they were trying to create a chemical version of ascension. You know, there's all this talk about ascension.
Yeah, that would be interesting, too.
I think that they may have injected me with something that was trying to create chemically a dimensional shift. But it's not, it doesn't work that way. It's something that you have to be prepared in your consciousness, not just in your body.
Yeah, I agree. It has to be a mental, physical, spiritual. And guys, when I use the spirit word, before anybody starts writing to me, I use this loosely. And the fact that I mean that different people, first off, look at spirit in different ways. And we're not talking about religion here either before he starts writing to me about this. We're talking about the essence of who you are. That's what it's called in today's world, spirit. So it may be something else somewhere else. You can call it whatever you want. But anyway, in order, if you're going to do anything along these lines, you're going to have your body, your mind, and your spirit, your soul, whatever you want to call it, in line with each other, or it's just not going to happen. Mm-hmm. And I see under duress, unless they figured out some way to maybe make you manifest it telepathically or something, I don't see how they're going to do it under duress. But, you know, they don't know. Yeah. They're dumbasses.
Well, everything in the universe is made of energy, frequency, and vibration. Even the matter that our bodies and our world is made out of is energy, frequency, and vibration. And if that's, I try to tell people this, and what they really need to do is they need to bring themselves up to speed on quantum mechanics and some of the new physics, and they also need to maybe do a little reading, like maybe read Autobiography of a Yogi by Paramahansa Yogananda, so that they understand what spiritual adepts are capable of. Because the same kinds of things that spiritual adepts are capable of right here in human bodies on our own planet are the same kinds of things that ETs are reported to be able to do. And if you think that you're going to really understand completely about the UFO and ET phenomenon without venturing into the spiritual and the energetic realms, you are sadly mistaken. You've got to have a grasp of the new physics and the support that new physics is now giving to psychic phenomenon and spiritual realities. And then you can start to understand more about how ETs use quantum science to fold space or travel through dimensions to get across these vast parsecs of space. And, you know, if you don't have an understanding of those new physics and the spiritual energies that underlie it, it's going to forever stay beyond your reach.
You know what, Nir? I think some people just prefer it that way. I got to be honest. I meet people sometimes that I really think that they're happy being the drudge.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's better. Maybe they're just happy being. I don't know what the hell it is. But I see people. I even see gifted and talented people sometimes who just. I don't know. They just want to be that, and they don't want to be anything else. And
you know, that's okay. You know, if people want to be that way and they just don't want to dig and do the work and everything else, like, that's fine. But what I have a problem with is when they start raining on the parade of people that are doing the work. You know, when they start calling spirituality woo-woo. Oh, don't give me that woo-woo stuff. Well, if they really knew what I knew, they would know that it's not woo-woo at all, and there are scientific models that are supporting it now.
Yeah. There's so much that people, they just don't want to learn. Well, you know, that's why I like to do science. It's one of the reasons when I was talking about it earlier, one of the reasons I've been changing the name of this show is because I want to do more science. You know, on UFO on the cover, I had Michio Kaku on, Neil deGrasse Tyson, Paul Levitt, a few others. I think altogether over the years, I've probably interviewed 10 or 12 physicists and theoretical physicists and a few other scientists besides that. But I don't get to do enough of it. And it's not because of my interest or the audience. It's the fact that when people hear the title UFO on the cover, they're like, nah, that's okay, thank you. I was talking to a Harvard professor the other day about coming on Joe Mantello's show. He has no problem, and we're even going to be talking a little bit about theoretical physics and maybe how aliens could get here and not. And I told him, you know, I referred to the show I did with Neil. I said, well, the title's been changed because he was leery about the title, but I sent him a copy of, and he really liked the show. And he said, man, you really know your physics. I said, yeah, it's one of my favorite subjects. I said, but I don't get to talk about it much because only time I get to talk about it is if it applies to, you know, extraterrestrial or, well, I do politics on Saturday and physics really follows. It really has anything to do with politics. Yeah, I think all politicians are freaking reptilians. Look, how y'all like that?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know what? I don't even want to hate on the reptiles that bad. They're worse than that. Cockroaches or something. I don't know. It is really sad, and it is a scary thing. And who's this? Jimmy? What do you want, Jimmy? Super soldiers. Oh. Mm-hmm. No, you know what I think about Anya Briggs, so don't even go there. It's not that I don't think there might not be a lot of things going on out there, because, you know, I know about some of the training programs, but I was fine with the super soldier things until she told me they were bringing Grays to her to interrogate, and I'm like, really? Mm-hmm. I said, no, do you realize Grays' head's this big around it would melt you like you would lunch? And I was like, that was it. So I left it alone. I said, you know what, if you can't say nothing nice, just leave it alone.
Yeah.
And you know, it's not that I don't think there's a lot of other stuff going out there, because there is, but sometimes I think people take it to the next level on their own. How's that? I've met too many contactees that, you know, I know a lot of stuff that goes on in abduction cases, but every now and then I get leery when it becomes about the contactee, not about the experience or anything else that's going on, but when they become the integral part of the extraterrestrial. That's when I get worried. Then I'm kind of like, is this really real or not? Because, you know, in a lot of parts, and I've heard you do it and other contactees do it, sometimes they refer to themselves in the third party, like you're looking at the experience.
Yeah, that's kind of creepy, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. But it's a true statement. So when I don't see that from other people who say they're contactees, I'm always a little bit taken back. How's that? Well, I'm trying to be diplomatic tonight, but it's tough, man. But it does take me back a little bit. And because it's true. I mean, anybody that I consider to be a real contactee over the years that I've interviewed, that happens to. And everybody, and when they're not, I'm like, okay. Because I get these phone calls about, oh, they're taking me because I'm going to be the queen. Or I'm like, whatever. No, don't write to me. Don't write to me. Write to somebody else. Or my favorite thing is nowadays, they're here to save us, or they're here to destroy us.
Yeah.
I keep telling them, actions speak louder than words. They haven't wiped us out.
They haven't wiped us out. And here in the human race, we have both people like Mother Teresa and people like Charles Manson, right here in one species.
That's right. So apparently they only partially enlightened us.
Yeah.
I don't know, guys. It's a scary thought. I think it's about them. I think they have their agenda. It's about their agenda, and we're part of their damn agenda. All I'm hoping for is that it works out for us in the long run.
Yeah.
I'm not so much worried about right now. I'm worried, you know, they seem to be very patient. They're very old races. They don't seem to be in a big hurry.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it takes 100,000, 200,000 years. What's the big deal? We'll be home for dinner.
Time and space and illusion. They could be popping in and out of our reality at all kinds of different times, and it could be the same person popping in today that popped in when the dinosaurs were walking the earth. you know,
we say this all the time. The guy who did your first abduction in your family, you know, whether it was 1,000, 5,000, 25,000 years ago, is probably the same guy that's abducting you. So it always bothers me a little bit, because I get to thinking about this. I'm thinking, this alien knows your family line intimately, much more detailed than anybody in your family will ever know your family line. It's kind of weird and creepy when you think about it. It gives them a psychological advantage over us that it far exceeds. I mean, because if you could really understand your family for, like, just even like last 10 you know, you're all the way back to your great 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 grandmother or something, you really understand who you are a lot better. Yeah. Because I see traits in my grandparents coming out from time to time. I'm like, oh shit.
Yeah.
You know, it worries me. But I know we're going to be getting out of here soon. But actually, poor near, I only got to talk half as much because I had to take that pain pill, the knife, and a damn toothache. So it makes me chatty. But no, I'm going to get you on real soon because I really want to get in and talk a little bit more about the book, but I want to, like I said, I don't want to give it away. And I had a lot of questions come in about the military abduction, but we'll talk a little bit more about that as well. Okay. Somebody had wrote in earlier, and I always like to slip this question in, and if you had to pick your worst and best experience, and by the way, if you don't want to talk about it, you don't have to, what would they be?
My best and worst experiences with ETs?
With ETs, because I think... Wait, hold on. I don't want to. I may have read that wrong. No, it's with ETs. Okay, because I thought it said something else, but it says ETs.
Yeah. Well, a couple experiences come to mind. One really recent, but I'll go back to the previous one. The really cool experience was when I really realized my spirit guides were there, and really made a significant connection with them. And they had been checking in with me throughout my life, you know, here and there, but before it was kind of like, man, is this really happening or am I imagining this, you know?
Yeah.
And when I really realized they were there, that was very powerful, and it was very, very good because I felt it was like not feeling alone, and believe me, I have felt alone and isolated much of my life, and so it was wonderful to not feel isolated anymore, and there's a feeling of communion with these beings around me all the time. It's kind of like the water that I swim in. And it's just a wonderful feeling. And then another recent experience I had was I just had a hypnosis experience last month where I went back to Lyra and I met my mother, my Lyran mother. And that was an incredible experience of actually meeting my mother, who loved me just as unconditionally as a mother could. And just looking into her eyes and seeing the love that she had for me, it was life-changing, even under hypnosis, to just have that experience of connecting with her, and it was just life-changing. And that, you know, the good energy from that experience is continuing to enrich me now. And I guess as far as the not-so-good experiences, the rapes that I went through and being on the moon. I know people really want to hear about the moon and I completely understand, and I'm hoping to do more hypnosis and get more details about that. But my time on the moon was just horrible. It was absolutely horrible. And even thinking about it now, my mind just wants to veer away from it, because it was just such a horrible experience being there.
Yeah, and I can see that. I mean, your mind's like, no, I don't remember this. The hell with this, man.
Yeah.
And it's contactees. You know, it's weird, too, because I was thinking about when you were saying about the moon, because we've got, I know there's at least two big ships. I don't know exactly where they are. Some people say it's in the solar system. They might be farther out. Mm-hmm. But they talk about those two big, because a lot of train exiles, and they're really big. I mean, when they're talking about, you really couldn't hide it behind the moon. And I know they talk, one of them is like rectangular shaped and one's kind of spherical shape. Damn, couldn't spit that out for some reason.
Okay.
Yeah, but anyway, they say it's kind of shaped like that. And then they talk about a base on the moon, a base on Mars, and a base on one of the moons out by either Jupiter or Saturn, one of their moons, they say it's a base. Mm-hmm. They talk about these, and they talk about all this stuff going on in between them and all. And you really, because when you listen to everybody talking about this, it means it's a much larger amount of contactees or people being taken than anybody's really comfortable about talking about.
Yeah.
And the fact that there's that many of them going and coming, you got to wonder why there's not a bigger, more missing people or people noticing that somebody's not here or not around or something along those when things like that are happening. I think that's where a lot of those non-physical abductions and even those uploads may come in. That way you're still here, but you're not still here. But then again, the grays can take you out of dimension, so they could pick you up right now. Let's see, it's 5 minutes after the hour. They could take you for 3 weeks and bring you back at 5 minutes after the hour.
Yeah.
And you don't know no better, and nobody else knows any better, and sure enough, you've been gone for 3 weeks. The only reason we even stumbled across that is people coming back with, like, beards, you know, Grizzly Adam beards, and women with hair that they were like, Jesus Christ, have you ever shaved your legs before? Those are weird cases, and you can't just explain those away. You know, they're just there. I just hate that anybody has to go through anything bad in any of all of this, but
yeah.
Hopefully in the end the things we learn and the things we gain from it outweigh the other stuff. I don't even want to get into what some of that stuff is, but we're going to get out of here, ladies and gentlemen. I know we got to go. Neera, thank you. You've been fabulous all night with my craziness tonight.
Thank you. I love being on a show with you. You know, you're just so much fun to talk to. I really enjoy it.
Oh, I always blessed because you're great to talk to, too. And we had a bunch of questions coming about you and Melinda, too. Look, guys, I'm going to tell you a little secret, okay? Y'all been listening to the show for a long time. Get your questions in early because if you get them into me, in the early part of the show, I'll put them up. Ones I want to read, I'll put up, and as I'm going through the show, like I did tonight, I'll read them. But if like near, I got on a couple of topics, I wasn't going to break up the topic for a question because it was better that way. To be frank with y'all about it. But anyway,
I can throw in here that I started a group on Facebook called Conversations about Facing the Shadow, Embracing the Light, so that people that are reading the book that have questions about material that I put in the book. They can ask questions on that page, and I will do my best to answer them.
No cheating, people. Don't go looking at the page. We read the book. God damn cheaters. I know what's going on. Don't think I don't know you people out there, man. Come on now. Actually, Neera sent me the page. Anyway, Liz, I had a great time tonight. I look forward to talking to you real soon again. I'll get this. Once I read through it, I'll give you a call, or I'll have Linda call somebody. One of us will call, get a hold to you. And we'll get it reset up. And, ladies and gentlemen, maybe late in the year, I haven't talked to Melinda in about a year. She's been a happy camp. I haven't been wanting to mess with her happiness, man.
Yeah.
And she's, last time I talked to her, she was all like, ooh. I'm like, damn, girl, who are you? Melinda and I go way back, so I can pick on it. I was like, damn, girl, who is this Melinda? I ain't never met this one before.
She deserves to be happy, you know.
Well, somebody and this is what's weird, because I hadn't even thought about this, but somebody wrote to me about a month ago and asked me if I would get me and you, Randy Copang, Melinda Leslie, and who we were talking about earlier, and I forgot who the other person was together to do a show. They said, like, that's the only 6 experts still alive today on military abductions. I'm like, really? Mm-hmm. I said, I don't know about all of that now. It's just kind of funny. Mm-hmm. Plus, they keep telling me, I keep getting emails from people and seeing postings on Facebooks, on blogs, that I'm the general in charge of abductions in the United States.
Oh, right.
I think, I think I'd be better off, y'all. I think I would want a little bit more for my troubles. I got to be honest with y'all about this. I think I really would. But anybody who's, when y'all get Neera's book and you read it, write to me, let me know what you think. Feel free to post on any of my 7 or 8 Facebook pages and let us know. Neera just gave you her, so y'all go over and check it out. Click like, get by the book, check it out. Tell me what you think, people. I keep hearing the economy's better. What the hell? Anyway, I'm sorry, I was a cheap shot. I apologize. We're going to get out of here. So we should be looking for you starting to speak places pretty soon then, right?
Yeah, I just spoke for Orange County MUFON last month, and I'm open to speaking at any places out there. So if anybody has got a conference going on and they're looking for a speaker, I'm considered a very good speaker.
Yes, y'all heard. She can hold her own with me. You know she can speak. Lord have mercy, people. It's easy for you, but we get some of these rookie guests that ain't never met anybody like me. They're like, oh, my God, what did I get into? And I'm real polite. I'm like, well, you just tell me to shut up. Oh, God, no. Anyway, I had a great time tonight. Guys, y'all check out the book. Be sure. Let me know what you think. Write to me. Next week, I have no idea what we're up to next week, but it'll be fun and good, I'm sure. I know we got some more MILAB stuff coming up in the near future, and I know we got part 2 of one of the alien abduction studies coming. Oh, and we do have a thing. By popular demand, we're going to do a show just on the blood type studies. Probably somebody from another radio station asked me if I'd do it, I guess because they want to listen to it and see if they want us to come on and talk about it. But anyway, we're going to be doing it real soon, and it should be a lot of fun here. Again, thanks for being with me tonight. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm glad y'all check in with us every week and have some fun. Be sure to keep up on the air, keep up myself and everyone else. People, remember, life is short. Enjoy it. You know, somebody the other day said, Jesus Christ, you're one of the busiest people I know. You know why? Because the most I can hope for, 80, 100 years, and I plan on, when they say, do you regret anything? I say, hell no. I said, yeah, I regret it. I didn't get enough done. That's what she said. Good night, everybody.
On everything, and we're not afraid.
Love to see you there, people. So you're listening to you.